Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 44, Pool of Radiance. I am one of your co-hosts, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, that guy with calves of steel and sex appeal, the Codemaster, Cody Martin.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah, glad to have you back. It's been a few weeks. You've been off fighting the Nintendo ninjas, but you are back to help me talk about Nintendo once again.
Indeed. Had to do some combat. I'm back and hopefully here to stay. But yeah, let's do this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our big topic this week is going to be a Rare retrospective. That was something that a listener wrote in and asked about, so we're going to do that this episode. But before we do that, we're going to kick it off with some rumors, news, and game impressions.
Let's do it.
Specifically, let's start off with the rumors about The Legend of Zelda for Wii U that have been swirling around for the last few days. Cody, do you want to give a rundown of what these rumors are?
Well, apparently, if these are to be believed, we'll have the choice of male or female Link, which would be unprecedented. Full voice acting, which is huge for especially a Zelda title, because Zelda titles don't have any voice acting generally.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
Then this one seems a little more obvious, but that it's also coming to NX as well as Wii U. And I mean, frankly, that seems like a no-brainer. Last game we saw like that was Twilight Princess, which came out for both the GameCube and the Wii. And yeah, those are the juicy bits of the Zelda rumors.
Yeah, I mean, these aren't rumors that are really particularly hard to swallow. It's hard to say for sure if they're accurate or not. But, you know, these are all things that people have been asking for a long time. Certainly here on this podcast, we've talked about all these things, saying these are things that are obvious or they're just things that they really, really need to do. I mean, considering that it seems like NX is going to come out sooner rather than later, and, you know, they've been delaying The Legend of Zelda for Wii U, it would make a whole lot of sense if it came out on both systems. There's no reason to bring it out only on a dead system. Like you said, there is a precedent for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And frankly, yeah, it's really exciting that we'll have a choice in gender, as well as full voice acting, if these rumors turn out to be true. Especially, I'm particularly excited about the voice acting, just because it's, you know, before you've always had to imagine what the character sounded like, so it'll be really cool to actually get that full, I guess, AAA experience, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree, because that's one thing that I feel has kind of held the franchise back a little bit, is that it really is a top-tier franchise, but, you know, compared to other stuff that's out there, it doesn't necessarily feel like one, because it doesn't have, you know, full voiceovers and things of that nature. So to see them going that direction, to see them doing that, implementing that, I think that would take a big step forward in making Zelda feel like the top-tier franchise that it really is.
Definitely. I mean, it'll certainly add to the cinematic element of the experience that we sort of come to expect now from the mainline Zelda series.
Mm-hmm. And according to this rumor, Link would not be voiced. It would be pretty much everybody else. But to me, that makes sense. I mean, Link, you know, usually doesn't talk at all, so I wouldn't really expect him to say any lines of dialogue anyway.
Right. I mean, but we don't want a repeat of the Zelda 80s cartoon.
No, we definitely don't need that.
Well, excuse me, princess.
And of course, I keep saying, you know, he won't talk, but, you know, it could be a he or a she. And I really like that rumor. I mean, for a long time, I've just really thought it's very silly that there is not a female Link. And I don't think Link really counts. She's totally a different character. She just, that is not a female Link, even if it looks like a female Link. But getting to have a true female Link as the protagonist, it's like, this is a character that is constantly being reborn. It's not the same character every time. It's, you know, someone new every generation. And it's always seemed weird to me. Why wouldn't it ever be a female? So it just always seemed like a really natural way to go and something I've wanted for a long time. Not necessarily a choice. I wouldn't find if it was just, you know, only female Link. But hey, if you're putting a choice in there, that's that's fine as well.
Yeah, I mean, it makes complete sense with, you know, like you said, with the whole, you know, story and all that. You're essentially reborn every single time. I'm wondering, though, if it is true that will Princess Zelda also change genders to sort of match the narrative? I don't know.
I think that would be kind of weird. There's no reason it should. It's not like Zelda and Link, you know, usually have a romantic relationship. And even if they did with a female Link, you know, not there's anything wrong with that, as they say.
True.
I don't think they would. That's kind of why I sort of wish it were just a female Link, so they could make the narrative and have whatever kind of character relationships they want, and maybe not have to worry about if it makes sense with a certain gender or not. But, you know, if this is true, then I think it's a great, great thing. However it unfolds, I certainly hope all these rumors are true.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm definitely counting down the days until Nintendo's E3 announcement.
Yeah, looking forward to getting the official word on Legend of Zelda for Wii U and or NX and finding out all this stuff in concrete detail.
Well, speaking of other rumors, we've just heard that Smash 4, Splatoon, and Super Mario Maker will all potentially be NX release titles.
That's right. According to this rumor, it's not just The Legend of Zelda that's making the jump from Wii U to NX. It's also these other three, you know, rather popular titles for Wii U. And I'm not really sure what to think about this. I mean, even the rumor, when the rumor broke, they were kind of like, yeah, this is kind of maybe 50% might happen. So even the people who are, you know, rumor mongering this to begin with are kind of on the fence,
like,
and hedging their bets about it.
Right, exactly. So, I was about to say,
it's, you know, what should we really believe?
Yeah, it's almost like they don't even have, you know, they're installing sort of a failsafe, like, if it doesn't turn out to be true, they're like, oh, well, I said it may not happen.
Yeah, I mean, I could make up all kinds of rumors about games that are coming out on Wii U and say there's only 50% chance of it happening.
It's true. But I think Smash, though, is one of the ones that makes the most sense. I personally had thought that this would be something they would do just because I'm not sure when we'll see a Smash 5 on the NX, but considering that they're still, you know, it's still a popular title, I could totally see them porting it to NX. And I believe,
well, according
that,
to the rumor, this one is, you know, it's a lock. They're saying, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
that
was
one
the
is
one
definitely coming.
Exactly. They
Mario
said 100%.
Maybe not so much. But this whole thing, to me, it doesn't sound very Nintendo-y at all. This isn't something Nintendo usually does. I mean, Nintendo certainly does do ports, even just a generation or two after a game has been released. But working on, you know, four different ports is, you know, not really their MO. And so, you know, I'd say that we take this one with a lot of grains of salt.
At the same time, though, we've learned, and, well, I guess not learned, but we've heard from various developers that this is one of Nintendo's most forward-thinking moments. I can't remember who said it, but someone was quoted as saying, you know, this is the most forward-thinking they've seen at Nintendo in regards to a console since the Famicom. So, I mean, I could totally see Nintendo changing up a lot of things with this new strategy that they're going for.
Well, personally, if I bought NX and some of the marquee titles are Smash Brothers, Splatoon, Mario Maker, I would be pretty disappointed that it's all the same stuff that I played on their previous console.
That's true.
Interesting thing about this rumor, though, is if this is true, does that mean that NX is not backwards compatible? If it were backwards compatible, you could just fire up Wii U games on the NX. There'd really be no reason to have to port them over because you could just turn on your NX, plop in those Wii U discs, and the you know, communities surrounding them, they would still be completely viable and ready to go. And you could just enjoy those games off of the Wii U disc.
Yeah, that's
so maybe that is, you know, what this is saying, if, again, if it's true.
That's true. That's a very good concern to raise. I guess I could also see them doing it sort of both ways, where they'll re-release maybe like remastered editions on the NX, and it's still backwards compatible.
I suppose it's possible, yeah, but again, it's a very non-Nintendo-y thing to do.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, absolutely.
If I had to say, you know, true or not true, I would say this is, you know, not super likely to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that I feel really confident about, and not just because the leaker or whatever said that it was the most likely, but I do feel really confident about Smash making it over to NX, at least in some form or another, before Smash 5 anyway.
Well, I guess we'll see. Well, here is something that is not a rumor, and that is by the time people are listening to this podcast, there will be a trio of new Super Nintendo games out for the new 3DS systems, those being The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Super Metroid, and Diddy's Kong Quest, also known as Donkey Kong Country 2. You excited about any of these titles?
Yeah, you know what? I am actually pretty excited for Super Metroid. I've been thinking about that game recently, actually, and I've wanting to dig into it. Yeah. That is actually one that I have never personally beat, surprisingly. Oh, man. I know, sacrilege. But I am very, very interested in it. I have seen it beat many times, and I have played a little bit of it, but for whatever reason, I fell off. So I would definitely be interested in picking it up on the new 3DS and being able to just play it whenever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotta say, I'm most excited about Link to the Past, because as I've talked about on this podcast before, it is pretty much my all-time favorite game, and being able to play that on my 3DS anywhere I go, anytime I want, is super awesome. And Donkey Kong Country 2 is no slouch either. So, yeah, if you haven't played any of these, or even if you have, I would totally recommend them.
Well, I don't know about you, but I already had my dose of portable Link to the Past with the Game Boy Advance version.
Yeah, that came out like 10 years ago or something.
You don't still use your Game Boy Advance? Come on, bro.
I am all ready to get a new excuse to buy that game all over again. Incidentally, I think, you know, pretty much as we're recording this, I believe it is Link to the Past's 24th anniversary in North America today. So there's another reason to go get it tomorrow. Celebrate. Woohoo!
That's right. 24 years. Woo! Big milestones.
All right, well, moving on from that, I would like to give some game impressions. Now, I gotta say, this has been a fairly crazy year so far with Nintendo releases. I mean, this past week, you know, it's kind of calm. There wasn't anything new this past week, but, you know, so far this year, we've had, you know, Twilight Princess, Mario & Luigi, you know, Fire Emblem in, you know, two releases, plus the third downloadable one. Pokken Tournament, Mario and Sonic, Hyrule Warriors, so much stuff. It's felt like, you know, it's the holiday season already just in the first and beginning of the second quarter. It's nuts. So one of the games that sort of slipped through the cracks that I hadn't been able to play came out about a month ago, and that is Project X Zone 2, or Project Cross Zone 2, as I believe it is supposed to be called.
Yeah, I have not had any experience with the Project Cross or X Zone games, but you're definitely right about the super busy release schedule that has unfolded over the past 4 months. I mean, I can't believe it's April already, but at the same time, I can't believe how many freaking games have come out already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, normally, totally. Normally you can count on like January through March, April-ish to be a pretty slow time for game releases. But so to just see this many titles, especially coming out of a fairly busy holiday season, is just wild. It's mm-hmm. pretty crazy.
Yeah, totally. Which is why I, you know, wanted to, you know, make sure I played this game, make sure it didn't fall through the cracks. And, you know, what I experienced while playing it is sort of everything I thought when I played the demo, only, you know, multiplied times 10. It is just this, you know, crazy orgy of fan service, basically. It's just absolutely nuts. Basically, if you love properties like Mega Man X and Strider and Darkstalkers and Ace Attorney and Sakura Wars and Dot Hack and Xenosaga and Resonance of Fate and Shinobi and Soul Calibur and Yakuza and Virtua Fighter, you will probably like this game. And it just takes all these characters and just tosses them together in a crazy blender. And it's kind of total nonsense in some ways, but as fans of a lot of these properties, it just totally makes me smile just seeing these characters again and hearing their theme songs again. When Hiryu from Strider shows up and it plays that, you know, classic theme song from the arcade and Genesis games, like, oh man, this really takes me back. And some of these games, they're like series that hardly even exist anymore. You know, are we going to see a new Darkstalkers anytime soon? No, we're totally not.
We're going to see a new Mega Man anytime soon? No, we're definitely not.
No, it doesn't seem likely. So yeah, seeing all these characters together, that's really what this is all about. The story is nonsense. Just these characters are showing up in, you know, different realities. Like, here are characters from the future, somehow in a computer program of Dot Hack. Dot Hack's another one I was really excited to see again. I forgot how much I loved that that IP. And then, you know, Phoenix Wright, he's defending Heihachi in court. And, oh, did you know that the Street Fighter bad guys made Dural from Virtua Fighter? Well, now you do. That's what it is in this game. So, yeah, it's just nuts, and I love having all these characters in there. And the turn-based strategy that goes with it is fine. It's nice and solid. It's, I think, secondary to all the other craziness. And, again, the battles are just complete, utter craziness as well. You're like scoring, you know, thousands of points of damage and doing, you know, dozens or maybe hundreds of hits in these combos. It's all, you know, canned animation and pretty much traditional turn grid-based strategy stuff. But hey, it's all in good fun. And of course, this has Fire Emblem characters as well, a bit of Nintendo goodness to go in there on top of the Namco and Capcom and Sega stuff. I would say it is pretty cool. It's kind of, you know, Fire Emblem's crazier, looser, younger brother. And I should point out that there is an encyclopedia in the game, so if you're just a hardcore strategy fan and don't know any of these characters, you can still look everything up and find out who all these guys are. I mean, even I haven't played all the properties in this, so when, like, Resonance of Fate characters showed up, I was able to be like, oh, that's what this is all about.
So but, if Project Cross Zone is Fire Emblem's crazy, looser, younger brother. Sounds like he's frequents the casino or something. I don't know.
Yes. I mean, certainly it seems like it's been drinking heavily, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, maybe he's like a... I'm getting like a scummy vibe if he's crazy.
A little bit. I mean, when I say there's fan service, I mean it in every way possible. So
maybe like a used car salesman. I don't know.
Well, it does have in-app purchases for DLC, so maybe that's a little bit accurate, too.
Maybe he spends a little too much time with the wrong crowd, you know? I don't know.
I think I'm going to move on from this to our next topic, which is some cool Nintendo merchandise that is purchasable online. The highly anticipated, at least by me, Legend of Zelda Wind Waker Nendoroid toy of Princess Zelda. It's up for pre-order now. Do you have any interest in this?
I'm not a big toy collector myself, but I think it is awesome that people who love Nendoroids, especially those who own the Link Nendoroids, can now have a Zelda companion for their Link Nendoroids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this works really well with the Nendoroid, you know, sort of super deformed aesthetic. So, you know, Wind Waker characters are a perfect match for that.
You know, I've never really understood the super deformed terminology.
You know, big heads, small bodies, that's what Wind Waker did, and that's, you know, what this toy does, and it looks pretty darn excellent.
The Wind Waker aesthetic is definitely lends itself well to the Nendoroid format.
Mm-hmm. And it comes with multiple face parts, so it can have different expressions. She's got like a combat expression, a smiley expression, a winking expression. Comes with a bow and the arrow of light, display stand, of course, and also a master sword and mirror shield that you are supposed to give to the Link Nendoroid if you pick that up.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah, and you can pick this up at online retailers such as BigBadToyStore.com. And one other piece of Nintendo merchandise I totally randomly stumbled upon a couple of days ago. You know, people who listen to this podcast know that if there is one sort of obscure, forgotten Nintendo game that I like talking about, it is Pro Wrestling on the NES.
Indeed. I heard many a story about that title as a Nintendo Power intern. I have fond memories of story time with Chris Hoffman.
Well, I'm not going to tell you too much of a story this time, but I am going to say that there is a t-shirt up for pre-order. It features all six of the main characters from pro wrestling and has a "Winner is You" emblazoned on the shirt. And you can pick that up at 80stees.com. When I stumbled upon this a couple days ago, I saw that they were doing a crowdsourcing thing and they needed to hit a certain number of pre-orders before it was guaranteed that they would make the shirt. But since then, it has hit the number. I pre-ordered one for myself, of course, but enough other people have pre-ordered it, so it's definitely going to get made. But, you know, people can still pre-order on top of that. And if you are a pro wrestling fan like me, you know, head onto their site, pre-order it, check it out, buy it in whatever size you want, and
become a winner. Is you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that does it for our news portion of the show. Let's take a little intermission, and when we come back, we will discuss our big topic, which is a retrospective on Rare. All right, we are back, and we are here to discuss our big topic, which is one of the all-time great Nintendo developers, Rare. Now, Rare used to be, you know, one of the biggest names when it came to Nintendo. These days, of course, they are owned by Microsoft, but back during the heyday of the NES and the Super NES and the N64, they were all over the Nintendo systems. So I thought, hey, this is definitely something worth talking about. Like I said, Rita wrote in and sent the suggestion. So I said, sure, we've got a chance to do that this week. Let's talk about Rare.
Sounds awesome. I know I definitely grew up playing a lot of Rare titles, especially on the Super Nintendo and N64. Mm-hmm. But what was your first experience with Rare?
Well, for me, it was on the NES, definitely. Probably the first time I was familiar with their name was RC Pro-Am, that being the weird isometric perspective racing game. But then after that, Wizards and Warriors was the one that I really got into. And I really, really liked Wizards and Warriors. That was just a really fun game. This is the one where you play as the Knight Kuros, and you are going around these different levels, collecting gems, collecting keys, collecting some cool power-ups. In a way, it's kind of, you can see like, hey, this is kind of a precursor to some of Rare's later stuff on the N64. We were running around doing all this collecting to get to new areas and stuff. But this was, you know, a 2D swords and sorcery adventure. I always thought it was kind of funny in the sense that it has all of these, you know, sort of super fantastic items that you could get. Things like the Boots of Force for kicking open treasure chests. There's the Cloak of Darkness that will let you become invisible to enemies, supposedly. The Wand of Wonder. The Feather of Featherfall. You would hold up on the controller so you wouldn't fall as fast. The Potion of Levitation.
Yeah, I think the strangest out of those is definitely the Boots of Force. Can't really understand why you would need special boots in order to kick open the treasure chest, but
well, apparently you did. But then, on top of all those, there was the horn. It's just called the horn.
The horn, huh?
Yeah. My friends and I, back in the day, we all called it the horn of horniness because we thought it needed a a fancy name like everything else.
Yeah, it's
but you'd get
funny.
The horn, and you would be like, this doesn't do anything. And you hit the button to make it work, and like nothing happens. It turns out that it doesn't do anything right when you get it, but it's actually really useful on the next level. You play it, and it shows you where secret doors are, and it's actually kind of cool.
Interesting.
But yeah, Wizard Warriors, a pretty fun game, and you know, very interesting on the challenge scale. You have infinite continues, and you respawn like right where you died. So in one sense, it's one of the easiest games on the NES, but when it comes to the exploration and the collecting, it could actually be kind of on the challenging side. But any way you look at it, it's definitely a fun game.
Nice.
I really liked its sequel as well, Iron Sword. That was a game that I remember seeing like on TV. I think it was on the television show 2020, like a year before it came out. Just, you know, seeing these little clips, and I thought the graphics looked so gorgeous. And I was really excited about that game, and that didn't come out for like another year. It wasn't, you know, maybe quite as good as I had been anticipating. But of course, the major thing about Iron Sword is that that is the game that famously had Fabio on the cover, the hunky male model from all those romance novels from back in the 80s and 90s.
That is pretty strange to have Fabio on a fantasy game cartridge. Yeah,
he was there in his loincloth on the cover of Iron Sword.
Interesting. Well, I mean, on to games that people are a little more familiar with. We have Battletoads on our list.
Yes, Battletoads. I mean, that is one of the things that I would consider one of the all-time great NES games.
Oh, for sure.
Super difficult, but, you know, really well made, really well polished, you know, certainly one of the top, you know, it was 20 when we did our top 20 list. Was that on there? Was it top 25? But I'd certainly consider it way up there. Just, you know, did amazing things with animation and co-op gameplay, and sure, it was frustrating and probably made a lot of people break their controllers and smash their TVs, but, you know, very, very cool game.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be in my personal top NES titles, but I definitely respect it, and it definitely was groundbreaking for its time.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they did a lot of other games on the NES. I mean, they were so prolific back then. I mean, there's a lot of games you probably didn't even realize are made by Rare. We talked about on our recent wrestling episode, they did some of the WWF games, WWF WrestleMania and WWF WrestleMania Challenge. WrestleMania being totally terrible, WrestleMania Challenge being very fun, in my opinion. But, you know, on top of those titles, they did, like, Nightmare on Elm Street, which was pretty crappy. They did arcade ports like Pinbot and Cabal that were pretty decent. They made a neat little game called Snake Rattle and Roll. They made a follow-up of sorts. I always thought of it as sort of a successor to RC Pro-Am called Cobra Triangle. It was a boat game, not an RC car game, but a boat game. And they were just doing so much stuff, and a lot of it was really, really good. Some of it wasn't, but it was amazing how much stuff they did. And part of the big appeal, I think, was the music. Even back then, David Wise was pumping out some amazing tunes and just sort of had this trademark Rare sound that to me was really, really amazing and was right up there along with, you know, the best companies on the NES, you know, the Capcoms and Konamis. It's kind of weird to say that an acclaimed title, you know, was fairly amazing, but hey, when they had Rare coming out and doing their stuff, yeah, it was kind of true.
Yeah, they definitely made a lot of stuff that I actually was not familiar with.
Yeah, it's easy to overlook that some of the stuff because there's so much of it. They actually made one called Taboo, The Sixth Sense, which isn't even a game. It's like a tarot card thing to predict the future with a big disclaimer on saying, warning, this does not actually give you mystical powers. Yeah, it was crazy.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, one thing, if nothing else, that Rare is known for, it's for making cult classics and actual classics.
You know, then after doing all this stuff on the NES, then along came the Super NES.
Yes.
And they didn't have nearly the impact that they did on the Super NES than they did with the NES. I don't know why, but they had been, you know, just focused on NES stuff for such a long time. I think it was a little hard for them to make that change. And there was this Battletoads sequel that everybody was excited about. And I remember seeing previews of it. It just seemed like it was taking forever and ever and ever to come out. But it finally did, and they finally delivered Battletoads in Battle Maniacs.
Yeah, funny enough, my first Rare experience was actually with the SNES titles. I remember playing Donkey Kong Country for the first time at some babysitter's house when I was a kid, and ended up really liking it. And then later, I played Battletoads on the SNES with one of my cousins. And then I actually also played another one of their SNES classics, Killer Instinct, for the first time at a furniture store, weirdly enough.
That is a little odd. So yeah, you know, Battle Maniacs came out, and it didn't have nearly the impact that the original Battletoads did for some reason. It just sort of went out there, and people didn't seem to be as excited about it. I know for some reason I didn't play it as much. I'm not sure what happened there. But then, yeah, as you're alluding to, then they finally started hitting their groove a couple of years later, and they just exploded onto the scene with Donkey Kong Country and Killer Instinct. And, you know, they kind of blew almost everybody away with those games, you know, setting, you know, new standards with, you know, the pre-rendered visuals and made it into like a really huge thing at the time. I mean, a lot of people, you know, now they kind of look back on that like, oh, you know, that's no good. That was kind of lame. They poo on it. But at the time it was huge. It was amazing. And, you know, it looked pretty darn good too.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo even trusted Rare to essentially revive the Donkey Kong series with Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a dead property before they handed over to Rare. You know, we had Donkey Kong and Junior and then Donkey Kong 3. But after that, you know, we hadn't seen Donkey Kong in a long, long time. I remember there was a rumored, like, Return of Donkey Kong game that never came to light. But yeah, then they gave it to Rare, and they blew everybody's socks off by making it into a full-blown platformer and turning Donkey Kong into the playable hero for the first time. And of course, they also, I think, gave him that tie as well. Introduced Diddy Kong. I don't know about you, but I thought it was a really, really well-made platformer.
Oh, totally. I mean, it has its wonkiness in some regards in terms of, like, hit detection and stuff.
Maybe a little.
But I mean,
I find that when you get into a rhythm and you're just sort of, you know, bouncing from enemy to platform to vine, it's one of the most, you know, fun platformers out there on the Super NES.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I definitely enjoyed my time with it. And it's one that I find myself returning to when the itch arises.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you think of the sequels of Donkey Kong Country 2 and 3?
I actually really enjoyed Donkey Kong Country 2. I played it a lot, probably as much as I played Donkey Kong Country 1. Donkey Kong Country 3, I thought it was a good game. Not as good as the first two, but I did enjoy it when I played it. I was also not a huge fan of Baby Kong. So yeah, there was that too.
Kitty Kong, is that was his name?
I can't remember. Yeah, Kitty Kong or Baby Kong or something like that. But
yeah, it wasn't Baby Kong. I think that was Kitty Kong.
Whatever.
I kind of thought that was a downfall of the Donkey Kong Country series. And, you know, maybe even Rare as a whole.
Really? You think Donkey Kong Country 3 was the tipping point?
No. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that one of their weaknesses is that sometimes their character designs were kind of lame.
Oh yeah, that's true. They didn't always hit the mark in that regard, but
I really like Donkey Kong, and Diddy was fine, but then they're like, okay, we're gonna take Donkey Kong out of the equation. I'm like, well, but Donkey Kong, he's like a big old cool gorilla, one of the all-time great Nintendo characters. And then they took him out, but Dixie was pretty cool too, and she had the neat ponytail spin, and you know, the two of them would rock out, which I kind of liked. And then they even got rid of Diddy, and like you said, they put in Kitty Kong, and
yeah, that was
he
just super
was just
random.
Really unappealing. It's like, oh man, so they took out both of the characters that I liked, and you know, the game was still fun and enjoyable, But because of the character choice, it was just a lot less appealing to me. As for Killer Instinct, you know, that was basically Nintendo's entry in the fighting genre back then, you know, putting it on similar ground as Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. And I never really got into it, but my brother, man, he was such a fan. He got pretty darn good at it, too. He would go out and play it in the arcade, and boy, he was super excited when that one came out on the home system. Now, I know you said you played it. Were you, like, hardcore into it like that?
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, like I said, I played it at that furniture store, and I played it a few times at a friend's house, but I was never super into the series. But, I mean, I definitely enjoyed playing it.
Yeah, I kind of dabbled in it. Yeah, I never became a master. I couldn't do all the super crazy combos that you were supposed to be able to do. I tended to play a little bit more like Street Fighter, much to my detriment. But, you know, I could dial up a combo or two here and there. But I remember, you know, my brother was so excited about it that we had to go on quite a trek to track down a copy. I remember driving quite a ways to try to track that down. And, of course, he was super excited when we did.
Would you have called it a rare game at the time?
Certainly, in my hometown, it was a bit rare and tricky to find. Yes,
it was a rare, rare game? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying,
okay.
Indeed.
Okay, just want to make sure.
So, yeah, I think that Rare was really instrumental in the Super Nintendo's success in some of its later years. But then, where they really, really became a major part of Nintendo history, and I think what a lot of people know them best for, was when the N64 came out. And they put out a whole bunch of really well-regarded titles on that system, including Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about how sometimes their character design choices weren't the best. Well, I think Banjo-Kazooie was one of their character design choices that was fantastic. I mean,
really?
Yeah, I mean, it was so random almost, but also super cool. And I mean, they did a lot within that character design, you know, as you upgrade Kazooie and stuff. And yeah, I think it was definitely one of their more charming characters. And, very charming in general, in terms of the whole gameplay experience and the wacky world it's set in.
It's definitely wacky.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I guess I have a soft spot for Banjo where some people don't, but I yeah, I don't know. It's a cool game. And
it is.
I mean, other than that, though, I would say that GoldenEye was one of my favorite games on the N64.
Yeah,
for Rare,
when you're talking about Rare and you're talking about the N64, you have to give it up for GoldenEye.
Absolutely. I mean,
because that was like a big, you know, not only was it a hole in Nintendo's area of expertise, but really no one had done the first-person shooter thing justice on consoles at that point. And then Rare comes in, sort of out of nowhere with GoldenEye, which originally, of course, was supposed to be like something totally different on the Super NES. But they come in and they bring out GoldenEye as a first-person shooter on the N64, really take advantage of the built-in multiplayer, and it became a freaking phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, it really did help to further define the first-person shooter genre, I agree. And
big time.
Yeah, it just had a really great campaign. It was really fun to sort of sneak around, but also run and gun if you wanted to. I think the challenges were interesting because you were actually doing the spy stuff that that took place in the films.
I will admit, I'm not really a first-person shooter guy. First-person adventure, like Metroid, sure. But a first-person shooter, not so much, and back then, especially not. So that was another one where my brother was, like, always playing it, and he could totally kick my butt. If we tried playing multiplayer, I would be, you know, totally destroyed by him. But even in single-player mode, you know, it was something that I wasn't quite comfortable with, back at the time. I mean, playing a first-person shooter game with the C buttons like that on the N64 took some getting used to for me. But I know a lot of people really loved it, and that includes you, of course.
I really just enjoyed the single-player and the multiplayer, playing it, you know, locally with friends. Of course, there was always the screen watching that you don't really get a whole lot of anymore, I guess, since a lot of it is online. But yeah, I mean, I just really had a lot of fun with it growing up. I think it'd probably be a little difficult to return to nowadays just because it is sort of clunky. But at the time, I mean, there was nothing really else like it, especially on consoles.
Yeah, it was totally groundbreaking.
Yeah, especially in regards to the multiplayer shooter experience.
Yeah, I wasn't at all prepared for its popularity. I remember going into the video store. You know, that was back when we had video stores. I went to Blockbuster. I remember I went in the first day and they had a crap ton of copies. I guess the game had like literally just come out that day. And I was like, oh, I need to check this thing out. But not today. I'll get something else. And then like I couldn't find it for like a month. It was just constantly sold out or rented out. And then my brother, just went out and bought it. So I was able to try it that way. But yeah, just the popularity was crazy. Did you have any favorite maps or weapons that you tended to use the most?
I mean, every time we played, my friends and I would always rush to get the golden gun because you would kill the other person in one shot, right?
Yes. So,
I mean,
this is true.
Yeah, I mean, that one was always really, you know, fun because then you're the, you know, you're the cool guy on the map with the golden gun, right? But
the man with the golden gun.
Yeah, but I guess one of my other favorites was the rocket launcher. That was always fun playing with rockets only and then just blowing the crap out of all your friends. Or everybody blowing the crap out of each other anyway. I also really like the mines, the proximity mines or the remote mines, because you could set them up, you know, stealthily and like hide somewhere, and then as your friend walks by your mine, you explode it, or they walk over the mine and they don't see it and they get exploded, and so that was also just really fun. Another really fun aspect of the multiplayer. I think the mines and the other spy equipment / weapons were a really interesting addition, because it was a first person shooter, but then it also had all these other gadgets that you could control. But yeah, I mean, other than GoldenEye, of course, they developed Perfect Dark, which was another great shooter.
Did your love for GoldenEye carry over to Perfect Dark, or did you kind of, you know, lose interest at that point?
You know, it did a little bit, but I lost a little bit of interest, honestly. It was fun, but I was just really into GoldenEye, and at that point I had moved on to sort of other games and wasn't really paying attention. So I guess maybe I overlooked Perfect Dark.
Yeah, it seems that happened to a lot of people, I suppose. I know my brother never picked up that one either, and I can't really say why. Now, what about some of their other N64 titles? What about Jet Force Gemini, Diddy Kong Racing, Donkey Kong 64?
You know what? I'll start with the one I'm most familiar with. Donkey Kong 64.
Donkey Kong 64, yeah, the game that gave us the DK rap.
It did, indeed. I am a big fan of the DK rap. Actually, when Donkey Kong 64 came out, I was really, really excited about it for whatever reason. And I was
also before it came out.
Yeah, and I was honestly, I really enjoyed it when I was playing it. I don't know if that's because I was a younger gamer without a really sense of taste, I guess. But I don't know. I really enjoyed my time with it. I enjoyed the collectability stuff. I enjoyed the hidden secret element of it. I enjoyed its puzzles. I don't know. I found it really charming at the time, and I actually got all the way to King K. Rool's castle.
Oh wow!
And I was on some of the last puzzles that were extremely ridiculous before you could finally fight him. Mm-hmm. And I remember saving, and then, you know, not I remember saving and quitting and then just not touching the game for a little while. And next thing I knew was we had had some neighbor kids or whatever over at my house. And
oh, no. I don't like the way the story's going.
My friend's brother fired up Donkey Kong 64 and erased my entire game that I had spent
son of a monkey
weeks on. I mean, maybe even months. Like, I had been playing this game forever, it felt like, at the time, because it was not an easy game.
No, that's one thing that people kind of forget about Rare.
It was a pretty darn hard game, yeah.
They were known for making really hard stuff.
Yeah, and I mean,
that was a tough one. I mean, Battletoads, obviously one of the toughest of all. Banjo-Kazooie wasn't exactly easy either.
Yeah, but I mean, Banjo-Kazooie is another long one. Mm-hmm. Just like Donkey Kong 64, it was a long game, too. It was difficult mm-hmm. and long. So having my game erased just totally erased any hope of me beating it. So I've actually never returned to the game since then, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is fairly tragic.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I will just to sort of poke around, but I highly doubt I'll go back to the lengths that I went to actually try to beat that game because, yeah, that game was tough.
Well, at least it is on Wii U Virtual Console now if you wanted to ever give it another attempt.
It is. I mean, I could, you know, go back to it if I wanted to, but alas.
Yeah, that is a tale of woe, my friend.
I have moved on. The bad breakup happened, and I have moved on.
Yes.
But
as for me personally, you know, I was very hyped up about the game. I was like, okay, Banjo-Kazooie was pretty cool. Now we got them doing Donkey Kong 64. And this time it's like, you know, everything times five with the five different characters. And, you know, even more collecting. And, hey, Donkey Kong is back. His coconut gun fires in spurts this time. If he shoots you, it's going to hurt. And I was pretty amped up, and I played through, like, the first world with my friends. And then after that, we're like, you know, this actually isn't that good. I don't like having to retrace our steps with all these different characters. And I'm not sure how far we actually got, but this was kind of like Rare was like kind of going too far, I thought. So I applaud you for actually putting up with it that much. But there were kind of a lot of things that I thought DK64 kind of did wrong. One of them was putting in, you know, too much repetitive collecting. And the other thing, of course, as we touched on, they've done some kind of bad character designs at times, and that's never been more prominent than in Donkey Kong 64.
Hey, don't you talk bad about Lanky Kong, goddammit.
Especially Lanky Kong and Tiny Kong and who's the other one? I forget.
I don't even know. He's just Musclehead Kong.
Chunky Kong? Yeah, Chunky Kong, I think is his name.
But I'll have you know that Lanky Kong was the greatest Kong ever invented, and there's nothing you can do to change that.
I'm going to make a new rap song talking about how awful Lanky Kong is.
Well, you know what? I will not listen to it.
But another thing that game kind of made me think about is that, you know, Rare, you know, at one time, they were making all kinds of really creative titles. But in the N64 era, you know, they're making some really good stuff, but it kind of felt like they're really riding Nintendo's coattails at that time. It's like, okay, we've got Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, and DK64. These are all sort of, you know, iterative. They're very much like Mario 64. They're not doing that much innovative stuff. They're just kind of building on what Nintendo's already done. They did Diddy Kong Racing, which was a pretty cool racing game, but I kind of felt like, oh, we're just taking Mario Kart and we're building on what Nintendo has done.
It has planes. Obviously, now. Hey, it introduced planes, okay?
It does. And that's not totally true because, like I said, GoldenEye was completely innovative as far as, you know, first-person shooters on console goes. And Jet Force Gemini, I hate to say it, is a big gaping hole in my gameplay history. I've heard so many good things about it, but I've played it. I've only played it just a little tiny bit. You know, I think I borrowed it for a day or something and just played a couple hours. I wish I could play because, you know, I know that a lot of people consider it to be one of Rare's best titles.
Yes, that is not one that I played either. And I didn't get what you said there now.
But one that I did play a lot of was one of the last games that they made on the N64. I think one of the last ones that Nintendo published on N64, and that was Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Is this the first M-rated Nintendo game? Wait, Nintendo actually published this game? First party, is that what you're saying?
Technically, maybe. I can't remember if, like, officially Rare's the publisher, Nintendo's just the distributor, but I'm pretty sure that I would count Nintendo as the publisher, and yes, it was rated M, and yes, Nintendo Power did the official player's guide and sold it, like, in a black plastic bag, so young kids couldn't get a hold of it.
Jesus.
But yeah, originally, you know, this game was shown as 12 Tales, Conker 64. Maybe it was even something else before that, now that I think about it. And it was supposed to be, you know, super duper sickeningly cute. And it was, like, in development hell forever. It seemed like this game was never going to come out. And Nintendo Power would preview it, you know, once every several months. And be like, okay, here's where the game is now. Here's what's going on. And then it would just disappear for the longest time. But then it finally came out as Conker's Bad Fur Day. And I'm pretty sure in that form it was not really covered in Nintendo Power at all. I think they just ignored it because this turned this cute, cuddly squirrel character into, you know, a foul-mouthed, beer-swigging character with, you know, crazy libido, as well as a very wry sense of humor and lots of, you know, pop culture parody, which was a lot funnier back in 2001 than it is now. But I really had a good time with that game. I just liked the fact that it was very irreverent and very different, and it broke the mold, and it wasn't like any previous platformer I'd ever encountered.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was unapologetic as well. In how unique it was, especially for the time. I mean, and especially on the Nintendo console, for that matter.
Yes, it is totally not what you'd expect from a Nintendo console. I mean, this is back when they were waging battle against the original PlayStation. If you were going to have a game with a singing turd on it, you would think, oh, this would be on PlayStation and probably not on Nintendo, but you would be wrong.
It's true.
And it had, you know, cows that would have massive diarrhea and then they'd explode.
Plants with large bosoms.
Yes, it definitely had that. They were very bouncy. And I think you would roll balls of poop. And there was lots of blood and carnage. The teddies. There was the great war against the teddies. But yeah, that is definitely one of my top five Nintendo 64 games, and certainly one of my top Rare titles as well.
But it was all downhill from there.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of true. Because after that, we started getting into the GameCube era. And, you know, we were supposed to get Dinosaur Planet on the Nintendo 64.
That's right, Dinosaur Planet. Forgot about that one.
But it did not come out. And then it got moved to GameCube. And then it became Star Fox Adventures.
It was always meant to be a Star Fox game, though. I do remember that.
No, it was originally just called Dinosaur Planet. And Star Fox wasn't involved. It had a completely different main character.
Really? I could have sworn it was Star Fox with dinosaurs.
I swear on my scandalous pictures of Crystal.
All right.
That Crystal. Originally... Yeah, Crystal, the female character that was introduced in that game, the blue fox.
Okay.
Fox's love interest.
That is very creepy that you have scandalous pictures of Crystal, but fair enough.
Am I lying about that? I'm not going to tell.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, originally it was supposed to just be Dinosaur Planet, and I rather like that better. It seemed more interesting and innovative and unique, and it just kind of felt like they shoehorned in the Star Fox characters in universe.
I remember being really excited for Dinosaur Planet, actually, from the screenshots.
The music was also really good, and I got to see that running at E3 back in its earlier forms. Also back then, Cameo was supposed to be on Nintendo systems, and that ended up being an Xbox title, as well as, you know, some of their GBA stuff. They were starting to do GBA stuff. There was a game called DK Coconut Crackers, or I guess Donkey Kong Coconut Crackers. That was a fun little puzzle game. And there was supposed to be a Diddy Kong pilot game on GBA. And both of those games ended up coming out eventually, strangely enough, published by THQ, but they were called It's Mr. Pants. That was Coconut Crackers, and Diddy Kong Pilot became Banjo Pilot, since they weren't able to use Nintendo's properties anymore. What we're talking about is that, you know, this was around the time that Nintendo suddenly decided that they weren't going to work with Rare anymore after having all this crazy success in the NES and the later Super NES days, and especially on the N64. You know, then it all culminated with Star Fox Adventures, and that ended up being their last game published by Nintendo. And they decided to sell off Rare to Microsoft, which was just kind of mind-blowing at the time. You know, seeing how big of an impact they had on Nintendo, it was like, geez, can you believe that they're actually doing this?
Yeah, and it's not like Nintendo at all to sell off one of their studios to a competitor, no less.
Yeah, it was just really weird to see them take something that had been so essential and be like, yeah, sure.
Sure, big Microsoft, competitors, whatevs.
Go ahead and take it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was very, very weird. I mean, looking back, though, I think they definitely made the right call.
I wouldn't have thought so at the time, but I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, everyone was like, Nintendo is crazy. Like, Xbox just, you know, gained an awesome developer. But, I mean, what are they doing nowadays? Kinect games, right? I mean,
what did they do even right after Microsoft got
them? Well, I mean, that's a better point to make first. I mean, yeah.
I mean, they did stuff like, Grab by the Ghoulies, which no one cared about. Viva Pinata, which more people did care about.
Yeah, I mean, and most
Cameo, Perfect Dark follow-up. But then it just seemed like the longer they went on under Microsoft, the less productive they got.
A lot of the main people who were there during the heyday of Rare's time, left as well. Mm-hmm. So it eventually became a shell of its former self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and recently they've just been doing like as you were talking about, you know, Kinect sports stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I know they did Kinectimals, and I think...
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, they were doing something else, I think, that was slightly more interesting. I remember Conker is going to be used for a... what's it called? An AR game, or it's a tech demo or something for the Microsoft HoloLens. It doesn't look that interesting. It's basically allows you to control Conker, you know, anywhere you look is a platform that Conker. I mean, it sounds cool, but it just seemed really lame, and Conker looks very... He looks like he has not aged well from his substance ingestion. We'll just put it that way.
Well, they also, you know, brought Conker back for their Little Big Planet style game,
right?
And that ended up totally fizzling out. Nobody cared about that. They didn't really do anything interesting with that. And who's to say? I mean, it's possible that if they had sat down with Nintendo, then the main personalities of the company could have stayed on. They might not have, sort of lost their groove, so to speak. And things could have turned out differently. But, you know, the way I interpret it is that Nintendo totally saw the writing on the wall. They saw that, you know, whatever was there with Rare in its heyday was kind of, you know, going away or not going to be there anymore. And it turned out that it was a very smart decision. And I feel like Microsoft totally got the short end of the stick and did not end up getting nearly the powerhouse that they had bargained for. And in the end, it was quite the rise and, you know, dramatic fall, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's kind of sad to see them go that way. I mean, they still have made a few good things, but like, you know, the new Killer Instinct, that's not even them.
Yeah, that's
Microsoft
so weird.
Has Killer Instinct, and another company is totally doing it.
Yeah, that, I mean, again, it just goes to show that the same people who were very influential in its success are not at the company anymore. So, you know, that's why they've sort of been delegated as rare in name only to creating experiences that have no resemblance of their previous of their previous creations.
Yeah, or maybe it was, you know, like I was saying before, a lot of their biggest hits seem to be inspired by, you know, some of Nintendo's biggest hits. And maybe without having that direct contact and influence, you know, that was another reason that they started to fall behind. And anyway, it is all kind of, you know, sad how this went. But, you know, I like to look back on them and think about, you know, their great times during the NES and N64 and Super NES days. And, man, I sure wish that Nintendo would just be like, okay, Microsoft, we're going to cut you a nice fat check, not nearly as nice as the one you cut us when you bought the company. We're going to cut you a nice fat check and bring back a lot of these games so they can be on Virtual Console,
well,
you know, where they belong.
Yeah, I was actually just about to say, I totally forgot about this, but they recently released their Rare Collection.
It came out last year.
Yeah, so they did. They have
on Xbox.
Yeah,
Xbox
so they
One.
Are they are trying to bring the games, you know, trying to give the games the recognition and love that they deserve, you know, all these years later. So I'm glad that Microsoft is doing something with the Rare properties and not just letting them rot in a cave.
Yeah, that was really like the only thing they released last year, as far as I can tell. It was their 30th anniversary. So here's 30 Rare games, all on one game disc. You know, obviously, there are no, you know, Nintendo games like Donkey Kong Country in this collection, but there are actually things that Nintendo produced, such as Slalom, which was one of the first games I think they made for the NES. It was a skiing game, and it was actually pretty terrible. But stuff like Battletoads, yeah, you can play it that way. But come on, for everybody who grew up playing this stuff, I think, you know, they would love to see it on Nintendo systems. You know, it's not like Microsoft is averse to putting that kind of thing on other hardware. We actually got a Viva Pinata game that THQ published on Nintendo systems, so there was that. There were the other GBA games I was talking about earlier. Those were all published after the Microsoft takeover. So I wouldn't say it's completely out of the realm of possibility, but I'd say it's highly unlikely. But yeah, it's something I'd love to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think any fan of those classic games would agree.
If you could get any single Rare game to show up on Virtual Console, which one would it be?
I guess I would say something like either GoldenEye or...
That's a good choice.
GoldenEye or Banjo-Kazooie. I mean, just so that you don't have to bring out your old, you know, N64 and dust it off. I mean, if you're like some of my friends, though, you already have your N64 set up and still out to play games like Smash Brothers and Mario Party. But I mean, for a lot of people, I'm sure they would definitely appreciate having games like that on Virtual Console from Rare.
Yeah, if I could choose, I think Battletoads, Wizards and Warriors, Conquer. It's really hard for me to pick just one, and of course Jet Force Gemini, because I've never played it. But one of those would be my pick. I sort of have a real soft spot for Wizards and Warriors, so I don't know, maybe that one. But yeah, it'd be cool. But again, I'm not holding my breath.
Indeed.
Well, I hope you have enjoyed this trip down memory lane discussing Rare's old titles on Nintendo systems.
Yeah, I really have, actually.
But I think that does it for this week's show. But before we go, you know what we got time for?
The dramatic reading.
That's right. And this time it is going to come from the manual from the NES classic Metroid.
In the year 2000 of the history of the cosmos,
represent is from the many different planets in the galaxy, established a congress called the Galactic Federation, and an age of prosperity began. A successful exchange of cultures and civilization resulted, and thousands of interstellar spaceships ferried back and forth between planets. But space pirates also appeared to attack the spaceships. The Federation Bureau created the Galactic Federation Police, but the pirates' attacks were powerful, and it was not easy to catch them in the vastness of space. The Federation Bureau and the Federation Police called together warriors known for their great courage and sent them to do battle with the pirates. These great warriors were called Space Hunters. They received large rewards when they captured pirates and made their living as Space Bounty Hunters. It is now the year 2000X5 of the history of the cosmos, and something terrible has happened. Space pirates have attacked a deep space research spaceship and seized a capsule containing an unknown life form that had just been discovered on planet SR388. This life form is in a state of suspended animation, but can be reactivated and will multiply when exposed to beta rays for 24 hours. It is suspected that the entire civilization of planet SR388 was destroyed by some unknown person or thing, and there is a strong possibility that the life form just discovered was the cause of the planet's destruction. To carelessly let it multiply would be extremely dangerous. The Federation researchers had named it Metroid and were bringing it back to Earth when it was stolen by the space pirates. That's only half of it. We will continue this exciting tale of the Metroid in our next episode. I'll bet you just can't wait to see what happens next.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at PowerProsPod. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can reach me, Cody Martin, at MoldyCarton. You can email us at powerpros@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you give us a rating on iTunes.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, the Codemaster, Cody Martin, and our good friend, Colonel Campbell.
Lolly lule lo, lolly lule lo, lolly lule lo.
We will see you next time.
He's the leader of the bunch. You know him well. He's finally back to kick some tail. His coconut gun will fire in bursts if he shoots ya. It's gonna hurt. He's bigger, faster, and stronger too. He's the first member of the DK crew.
MD. Monkey Dong. MD.
Oh yeah, I have to say that part. Here. DK. Donkey Kong. DK. Monkey Donkey Kong is here.